98.5thesportshub.com. Sean Silver with you as the Celtics continue to skid through an icy February schedule. Indiana Pacers up on Friday night, the number four team in the Eastern Conference at 15-15. Pacers beat writer Scott Agnes is my guest this week. His podcast is Fieldhouse Files. Actually interviewed legendary exec Donnie Walsh for your most recent episode. Check that out. Scott, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Sean. Good to talk with you.
Let's start with a ripe topic, All-Star Weekend. This was originally supposed to be Indiana's All-Star game. Of course, COVID had other plans, and now it appears that that's set to be in Indianapolis in 2024.
Yeah, that's right. So we're missing out on what should have been our All-Star Weekend, unfortunately. But I think we all understand the nature of everything going on. And
yeah,
as we've all heard, most of the players don't even want to go down to Atlanta for this year's game.
You think Malcolm Brogdon or Domantas Sabonis might have wanted to go down? I'm thinking maybe by 2024, All-Star voters might be a little more kind to them. I know that just watching the Celtics on TV the other night, Brian Scalabrine, who's the color commentator, was all over the fact that Sabonis got snubbed. What was your reaction to that news?
Surprising for the most part, because a guy like Sabonis doesn't just jump out at you. He's not a guy that's going off for 45, right? He's not a Lillard type guy. And so you knew he wasn't going to get the popularity vote as well. Being in Indianapolis, the Pacers against the Celtics, that'll be just their third national TV game of the season. It feels like Zion, meanwhile, is on every other night.
Yeah.
So those things are against a guy like Sabonis. So you need to lean on the head coaches in your conference. And so I thought for sure both those coaches would see his numbers, but also recognize the impact, because Sabonis is the hub of the team. And so if you follow the Pacers, you realize without him, they're almost a lost cause out there. And then on top of that, I think you throw in the fact the Pacers are fourth in the Eastern Conference. All those make for the fact that the Pacers should get somebody, and Sabonis is clearly an all-star in my mind. So yeah, I'm very surprised. But I can also tell you, Sean, he's not too concerned outside of a $1.3 million bonus. He will happily have that weekend to himself.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy who certainly, since coming into the league, has improved in all facets of his game, and the future looks very promising for him in Indiana, knock on wood. I love the traditional big man, but he's shooting a bit more outside the arc this year with some pretty good success, so I definitely see it as a snub. Another fringe all-star that's in Indiana's arsenal on their roster, I guess, would be Caris LeVert, who was acquired in the fallout of the James Harden trade. He's not playing due to some pretty serious health issues. I think a lot of NBA fans are rooting for this guy. What's the status going forward with Caris LeVert?
Yeah, it's a great story, and it's one of those where even a guy like Victor, while disappointed and surprised a little bit with the timing of the trade, he's a big man of faith and was like, look, man, there's clearly something else greater working here. The fact that Caris gets traded, and only because of that, they realized through a physical that he actually had kidney cancer at like 26. And so he's now 5 weeks removed from surgery. He's participating in practice in terms of the non-contact, the shooting, the drills, some cardio. And I would expect to see him back probably in mid-March after the All-Star break. But beyond that, just you got to feel happy and fortunate for him to discover this. And then Pacer fans are eager just to get one of their two starters back because they haven't seen Caris. And then TJ Warren's only played four games this season. And by the way, he was the team's leading scorer last year.
Yeah, TJ Warren obviously showing that he's a guy who can light it up, particularly when the Pacers are shorthanded and they need him, which I think has been appreciated. And Indiana's, you know, we mentioned they're 15-15. That's good in this topsy-turvy season to be fourth in the Eastern Conference. Last year, I had picked Indiana if they got Oladipo back and healthy, which he wasn't really all the way there. I thought that Indiana last year would have been the team to upset the proverbial apple cart in the East. That wound up being Miami. What do you think about their chances this year? Again, assuming a lot that you get TJ Warren back, but also that LeVert is healthy, happy, everything's going right there.
Yeah, so first of all, with the Pacers roster outside of that trade with Victor and Caris, they brought everybody back. So there's a lot of continuity, and that's been beneficial. However, the whole coaching staff is brand new. Even the one holdover left about a month ago, suddenly resigning due to personal issues and just chose to take the time to himself. So you do have some continuity, but you got to work in Caris here starting probably next month. And TJ Warren's, he's a ways away, meaning he's still in a boot. He's still on crutches. It's probably more like May, June. So I'm not sure what's realistic to hope from him. The Pacers' mindset is just to get past the first round, something they haven't done since Paul George was here in 2014. It's been that long. Now, they've been great at getting to the playoffs. That's one of their best attributes. They've reached the postseason in 26 of the last 31 years. But then they haven't done much about it, right? And so that's kind of that next step. And I think kind of right where they are is where they should end up, that fourth or fifth seed in the Eastern Conference.
All of the health stuff aside, how do you look at how Indiana played that trade? Oladipo was on his last year. He's pretty much a household name as far as NBA guys go. I mean, for God's sake, he was the thingamajig on The Masked Singer. And you know, then it seems like they're kind of up against it with him. They bring in a player who, again, assuming health, has some more term on his contract. That's kind of where Indiana has to live. They've got to develop young guys. They've got to win trades, and they've got to sign these guys up for long term. You say that the Pacers, you know, they get to the playoffs. I mean, they have one finals appearance. Their ABA record goes without saying.
Killer. Yeah.
But since moving over to the association, they've often been to the dance but gone home early. Where do they kind of have to play this over the next few years? I mean, to take advantage of a situation where you have three pretty much surefire 20-point scorers, another guy in Warren who's a nice piece. And you mentioned that cohesion, that depth. And that to me, that they just, other than the upheaval of the coaching staff, that's just a good NBA team, a consistent NBA team.
Yeah, and a lot of it, I will say, starts with ownership. Longest tenured owner, front office. You had Donnie Walsh for 20-some years. You had Larry Bird, who I know Celtics fans love probably more than Indiana fans even such. And that was, what, roughly a decade?
Yeah.
Now you have.
And we can share him, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
We can share.
That's fair. I think that's legitimate. So I think that's helped in due part. You look around the league, New York, Sacramento, Phoenix. Terrible ownership means you're just going to be torn to ruins and you're not going to have any kind of success. But you hit on it exactly, Sean. This franchise really has to work differently than the Celtics, for example. You're not going to get Kyrie Irving. You're not going to get Al Horford just to sign in free agency. Gordon Hayward, who we haven't even touched on just yet. What you have to do is hit on draft picks. You have to make some smart trades, like the Malcolm Brogdon sign and trade deal.
Yeah.
That worked out beautifully, and they mostly gave up just a first round pick. The one issue they've had really in this last decade outside of Paul George, is they haven't drafted well at all. TJ Leaf, who's now in his fourth year, they traded him away to Oklahoma City this year just to get off his contract. That's not good. That's not good handling of first round picks. You have had Aaron Holiday, Miles Turner, I should note, he was a good one. And,
oh, yeah.
And the trouble is mostly going back to what I said, because they win so much, they're always drafting 15 to 25. Never great, never bad. And so that's why, and I'm sure we'll touch on it, this summer was, I thought, a critical turning point, is they had an opportunity to potentially get Gordon. He wanted to be here, but as I wrote, the Celtics and Danny Ainge just didn't want to play ball. But that's the type of deal that the Indianas, the Charlottes, have to make, because they're not going to get these elite players to come to them. And it goes back even last thing with Oklahoma City. You send off an asset like Paul George, who wanted to leave and go elsewhere, and you brought back fringe all-stars that became all-stars. So that's another deal that worked out beautifully.
We've mentioned the names, the principals of this summer's, or I guess this fall's, rumor mill, meaning Gordon Hayward, who's having a great year in Charlotte. And I think that, you know, some Boston fans just couldn't adjust their expectations and wanted him out of here because they're going to be that way. I think other Boston fans are really happy to see him doing well in a new home, and some really miss him. Maybe there's an intersection of those final two groups. Was it really so simple based on what you were told? I mean, it was reported here that it was Gordon Hayward to Indy for Miles Turner and Doug McDermott. Was it really just as simple as that, and Ainge got cold feet? Or, to your knowledge, was the asking price higher? Were there other things working that wound up shutting that deal down?
Yeah, so from what I was told, Gordon made it clear that he would, to Indiana, that he would be really interested in coming home, signaling, hey, this isn't just smoke. Like, if you want to pursue me, I'm willing to sign here. And so then the Pacers got looked into it. It got serious a little bit in terms of their interests, and they were going to pursue that. But every time, from what I was told, they kept calling the Celtics, it just kind of got laughable. There was nothing reasonable. They made that was a typical offer that was on the table, moving Miles. And the Pacers even called Miles They felt it was their responsibility to inform Miles, hey, this isn't just rumor mill. We did offer you to the Boston Celtics, so you could get traded. May not, but we just want to make you aware. So that's, in fact, how serious it got. But Danny Ainge just held out. And I know Celtics fans are probably more confident in him, but I look at this deal as the Celtics got nothing for Gordon Hayward. Mm-hmm. They got a trade exception for 2 second-round picks, I think it was, to Charlotte.
Yeah.
So they had to offer up something to get that. So I look at the comments Danny Ainge just said here today, and I'm just laughing about it because, yeah, if you listen and read through those messages, it sounds exactly what Gordon is. He's a guy that's unselfish. He's a guy that's a true pro, a veteran influence. And to me, what I see the problem being with the Celtics is they don't have those role players, the guys that know their role and that are settled into it. They have a couple superstars and then some extra pieces, but there's a lot missing with this roster. And as others have said, it feels like the Celtics missed their window.
That's kind of the antithesis of Indiana. And we're going to figure out around here if the Celtics can still salvage it. I mean, you know, when you take top tier talent like a Tatum, like a Brown, I don't think there's any argument that they're two of the best, you know, better players in the Eastern Conference, and they're signed to long-term contracts. So you go with that. A lot of teams would beg to be in that position. But particularly the way Turner started the season for Indiana, a lot of Celtics fans were like, what, you didn't do this? I kind of had to remind some people, well, this is a big man who has a career average of about 6 rebounds a game. He's a good rim protector. He does shoot the three, but not a particularly high percentage. So when he starts the season going bonkers, there was a huge overreaction here. Like, I can't believe that they struck out. But Turner is a nice player and, you know, by all accounts, seems to be a pretty good guy in the community there as well. Given that you don't have Gordon Hayward on the Pacers going forward, you okay with the fact that Miles Turner is still in the fold as a starting center? The wisdom being now, you can't play two bigs at once in the NBA.
It's funny how the bigs have made a comeback, though. If you wasn't it like 7 years ago, the NBA removed the center position from the All-Star game.
Front court. Yep.
Yeah, which essentially signaled, it's not very valuable anymore. Let's just make it front court and call it generic so we don't have to pigeonhole and elect or vote in a terrible center to the All-Star game. But now it's jam-packed with a number of talented centers, everyone from Anthony Davis to Jokic, I think. But the only thing I would disagree with, Sean, with what you said earlier is referencing Turner's stats too often. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of that, he is what he is the thing I keep going back with Miles. He's never going to be your 20-point, 10-rebound per game guy. Mm-hmm. What he is a good defender, great rim protector, a guy that's good in the pick and roll, much better than Sabonis, for example. We've talked a lot about how good Sabonis is. He's not very good in that pick and roll. That's where Turner's good.
Right.
And I look at what the Celtics have done, they really haven't addressed in good light, I don't think, their center position. What they've decided to do is let's go cheap at that position. Let's be like the NBA and not value it very much. And it's a gamble. And it, so far it's failed because I think Turner really would have helped them out. And if he played in that style, I think he would be a better three-point shooter. He's not great. I admit that. He's not going to be a 40% shooter. But I think it would have opened things up a little bit more for him because if you look at the Pacers, they don't have great three-point shooting. So how opponents can defend the Pacers is much different.
Well, Scott, thanks for kind of cluing us in a little bit on what we're missing out on. It'll be an interesting matchup to me. The Boston Celtics, as you said, with those star players and some nice pieces, but not a whole lot in between against an Indiana team that I love watching them on League Pass. They're deep. They're entertaining. They got a couple of, as we've said, fringe all-star players, and they'll be playing the Celtics on Friday night. Scott Agnes, thanks for taking some time with me today.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
Scott Agnes, beat reporter for the Pacers. You can catch him at fieldhousefiles.com and on Twitter at Scott Agnes. And once again, I'm Sean Silver for 98.5 The Sports Hub. Tip off 7 o'clock on the 98.5 The Sports Hub, Celtics Radio Network, Celtics and Pacers.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.